We're going?
Which one are we doing first?
Whichever one you want, so let's start her up. Call to order the meeting of the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, March 17, 2010. We have a quorum. Senator Roebling, which one did you want to do first? You got two bills?
We can do Senate File 3096.
3096, State Government Buildings Disposal Process. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3096 gives us a simpler procedure of disposing of inexpensive kind of under $50,000, any structure that would be considered under that range. Right now, whenever we have some old buildings that need to be disposed of, we have a state staffer who has to go around and seek signatures from chairs of various committees, and it's technically on each and every one of the buildings. And this would say that if they're under $50,000, that they would not have to do that, that the commissioner could clear those buildings for disposal in an appropriate manner. And we have some pictures of some of these old buildings, if someone would want to pass them around, and you can take a look at what we're talking about. And I also have some witnesses here who can help explain how the process has been working if you want to know.
Yeah, I can't imagine you get much for $50,000, but we'll take a look. Okay, welcome to the Budget Division. Okay, welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Rose, Department of Administration. This deals with buildings like lean-tos, outhouses, other oddball pieces of buildings that are sitting on DNR property that the disposal is, the way it is now, takes so much time that this would make it a much more efficient operation. The value of the buildings is virtually not much, if anything. And in most cases, we would like to get them off the property or dismantled because they become issues for people to come out and do whatever they want to do that just happened to come across them. So it would be better all the way around.
So, Mr. Rhodes, what kind of process do you have to go through now to get rid of some of these buildings?
Mr. Chairman, I have with me Howie Gustner, who actually does the work on this stuff from the Department of Administration. Maybe she can kind of...
Welcome to the Budget Division.
By the way, members, I should just tell you, it doesn't really used to testify in the last Senate hearing. It was the only first time she ever testified, so just she may be a little nervous. And I promised her we would tell you.
You did
that.
Good.
We'll make
good
it memorable.
Full committee. I don't think you need to do that.
As I say, we'll make it memorable.
Hallie Gussner, I'm with Department of Admin, Fleet and Surplus Services. The process today is that we receive a disposal for the state property, and in order to proceed and approve those disposals, we, in writing, need to give this information to both the Senate and the House committees for them to first approve the disposal, and then it comes back to us, and then we approve it and send it from there back to DNR. So it could be as much as a 3-4 month process in some cases.
It looks like you would still have, upon the request of the agency... So the bill on line 1.16 and 17 still says you have to obtain the approval of the chairs, though, the Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee, so you'd still have to at least check in with them. Is that what this would do?
On all buildings with a value of over $50,000.
Over $50,000, I see. Okay. And during the legislative interim, I mean, you know, people are still around. Are you able to do this during the interim? I mean, during the session when they're here, but, you know, sometimes it's hard to track people
right.
down.
In some cases, there is a long delay, and that's kind of the issue. DNR maybe have funding problems where the funding may run out or seasonal issues that it needs to be taken care of right away. So we're just looking for a way to speed up the process for some of these old buildings that most likely will just be demolished.
Okay. Now, I did not see a fiscal note here. Is there any cost to this, Mr. Rosa? Okay. Okay. Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard?
Mr. Chairman, one point,
Mr.
if I
Rhodes.
May. Maybe you want
yes.
to come.
Mr. Chair, the House has moved this bill along already, and they have a little bit different language in the very last sentence, and I don't know if...
Well, Senator Roebling, how do you want the bill to read? Let's not worry about the other body. How would you like the bill to read?
It reads pretty smoothly the way they put it, and so if we could... On line 1.21, after let's see, I mean, oh, what's the appropriate, I'm just looking at this very quickly, in which the appropriation to acquire the building was made. Okay, right after made, and we could delete the rest of that language and just put in the general fund or as otherwise provided under state law. So it'd say in the general fund or as otherwise provided under state law. And then delete the rest of the language on 1.21 to 1.23 and replace it with that.
Let me see if I've got this. So on page 1, line 21, after the comma, delete the rest of the line and delete lines 22 and 23 to the period and insert in the general fund as otherwise provided by state law.
Or as
otherwise provided by state law.
No.
In the general fund or as otherwise provided by state law.
Mm-hmm. So the commissioner gets to choose.
I guess the question is then the commissioner makes the decision then, or what's the effect of this then?
Well, Mr. Chair, it makes sure the money goes back to the appropriate accounts. Because if it is a DNR building and it was built with, say, license money, then it should go back to the appropriate fund and not to the general fund. It really is. We're trying to get at the same thing as we had here, just in a little smoother way.
Right. Yeah, the language as written is a little bit awkward here. So the proceeds shall be divided in the account from which the appropriation required was made in the general, in the general fund or as otherwise provided by state law. Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Okay, Senator Roebling moves the verbal amendment. Is there discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman, just
Mr. Rhodes.
For clarification, this last part was the bill that you, original bill, was put on in Senator Rest's committee by Mr. Botran, and the DNR came back. I should let them be known. They came back and said that they preferred the language that's in the House bill. No disrespect to Mr. Botran and his wordsmanship and excellence that he does.
Okay, discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails, amendments adopted. Okay, further discussion on the bill. And again, anybody else who's heard here to be heard on Senate File 3096? If not, then Senator Roebling moves that Senate File 3096 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay, thank you, Senator Roebling. And then your other bill is...
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. Mr. Gesner. Senate File 2858, State Agency Deposit Receipts Amount Requirement Change. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill does two pretty simple things. It actually increases the amount that is needed before a deposit needs to be made on a daily basis, but it has some safeguards still included in it that any money that is being accumulated can be identified as being safely stored to prevent its loss or theft. And then it also tells that when they have the charitable, I'm trying to think of the word here, combined charities fund drive, there is a registration fee for organizations that are coming in as recipients of some of those funds, and this helps describe how those fees will be deposited and dispersed, how the fees for registering will be deposited and used for the fund.
A question I've got, Senator Roebling. The section one of the bill, I mean, the current law says that if an agency has receipts totally more than $250 or more daily, they have to deposit. We've seen some legislative auditor reports from some agencies that just you know, kind of accumulate cash. They put it in the desk drawers or wherever they're putting it, and they just don't quite get around to doing this. This would raise the amount. I mean, you know, if somebody's sitting on, you know, $900, you know, I would hope that they would promptly deposit the money instead of just kind of letting it sit there and getting it deposited when they want to, because that's kind of an invitation to theft or anything. So what would be the reason for raising the amount for not, you know, not depositing if it's less than $1,000 on a daily basis?
Mr. Chair, I have a testifier here who would like to explain that.
Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Dennis Monkwitz from Minnesota Management and Budget. This issue came to us from the DNR because of the state parks throughout the state in fairly remote locations, some of them, and it's a burden for them to have to make daily or every other day trips to the bank that may be 20 or 30 miles away to deposit $250. So the request is really coming from them. In these days, there's so few transactions that are conducted in the state via cash or a check. And it's really trying to address the fact that there's less and less of that activity taking place in the state. Most of the activity at state parks is via credit cards. So it's just to address, you know, they're having to drive 20 or 30 miles each way to a bank on a given day if they have $250 in cash or checks there. So this is really an attempt to help them out, to save some money as far as the staff costs, to take time away from their other duties to drive to the bank and the mileage and all of that added up too. So that's really the attempt. The language hasn't been changed since 1981 when it went from a $50 requirement to the $250 level. So it's been 20 years or 19 years. So we thought it was time maybe to look at that change.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Anybody else who's, and let me just double check. Section 2 provides the fees deposited. Okay. Is anybody else who's here who wants to be heard? It's file 2858. Any questions? Is that rolling?
Mr. Chair.
And there's no fiscal, there's a fiscal note, but it shows there's no cost to this. So.
Right. So, Mr. Chair, I move that Senate file 2858 be recommended to pass and be referred to finance, full finance?
Yes. Yeah. Anything leaves here has to go to finance. There's no place I can send it to. So, okay. Senator Roebling moves that Senate file 2858 be recommended to pass, be referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Roebling. And any, let's see, Senator Rest, I guess, could just take my spot here while I'm.
Senator Betzel brings us Senate File 2188.
Madam Chair, Senate File 2188 is a bill that came out of meetings over the summer when we had an advisory group meeting with the Minnesota Management and Budget on how to properly report and monitor the stimulus funds that the state was receiving. The federal law required that we had to show how those funds were being used and develop websites to do that. During the course of those meetings over the interim, we were able to view the websites of other states and find that and some were quite user-friendly, where you could see that federal dollars were coming in. You could click on the local jurisdictions. You could see where the money was going, whether it was for education, whether it was for roads, whatever it was from. And the state actually developed its website, which we heard about actually in the in a report. I believe it was in this budget division. Saw a demonstration of that. that led us to think that we could do a better job within the state of reporting information on state websites. There's hundreds, thousands of state websites that are out there. And each website is developed by the own agency. And, of course, the agencies are not in the business of developing websites. They're in the business of doing whatever the agency's mission is. But yet, if you're a citizen and you're trying to navigate around, how you find the information in one website is going to be different from another website. And it can be very confusing for people trying to navigate around, and, you know, especially if you're trying to link up information that might be available in one as opposed to the other to try to compare information. So what we wanted to do is, first of all, establish somebody within the Office of Enterprise Technology whose job it would be to not actually run all the websites, but sort of assist all the state agencies in having some sort of consistency in their websites. You know, sort of a model that everybody could use so that we could at least have the citizens, as they go to one website to another, would at least have some common ways of getting the information. That, of course, has generated a fiscal note here and the cost of the webmaster. And so momentarily I'll be suggesting that we remove Section 1 out of the bill because there's a cost there that right now we couldn't pay for. Although, let me suggest, I think that could be done. Right now the state has something called a North Star website, and I think that the money that is spent on developing that could easily be used towards the state webmaster. And let me also point out that according to the legislative auditor, the OET did assign a full-time person to work for the governor's office without any interagency agreement. So I think that the resources are there, but if they want to come in with a fiscal note looking for funds for this webmaster, we can't pay for it. So as I say, I'll probably be moving to delete Section 1 out of the bill. But Section 2, 3, and 4 are really the heart of the bill because that sets forth that we want the transparency policies to be developed so that we can easily have these websites to be used by the consumers. So, Madam Chair, again, given the concerns about the fiscal note, I'd move to strike Section 1 out of the bill because that is the part of the bill that directs OET to have a webmaster, and that is basically the cost of the fiscal note that we have here. So,
Senator Betzel moves to strike Section 1 or delete Section 1. Is there discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the Betzel motion to amend, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, yeah, this bill was heard in the State and Local Government Policy Committee. I don't know if there's anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on the bill at this time. So I think we have.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak about Senate File 2188? Please come forward if you will. Good afternoon. If you would identify yourself for the record.
I'm Jack Ray, and I just found out I was going to do this 10 seconds ago. So I think this is a great idea. The potential for long-term savings for the state is tremendous, and it's too bad fiscal notes can't note that. Making our data accessible for citizens will be a very important step in increasing both accountability but also citizen engagement with state government. And I just wanted to say that I think it's a good bill, and it's an important step.
Thank you, Mr. Riley. The Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that was a good point. I've talked with the governor and some of the fiscal agents on these kind of issues at length on many items that we look at that have long-term savings, and yet the way we do our fiscal policy and our analysis doesn't allow that to be reflected in so that we can actually show citizens that we're putting something in place in order to save money down the road. So I think that comes up way more often these days than we have any way of acknowledging.
You know, in our, I'm just going to comment about the almost the same thing. In our, in the way in which we do revenue estimates and fiscal notes, we look at what something costs, but just in the moment, the snapshot, rather than we don't do what we call dynamic scoring that predicts behavior based on a change in policy. And although probably Minnesota wouldn't go to that system, I've been talking with Matt Mosman about asking the departments to, you know, have like a note that does not affect the fiscal note in and of itself in terms of what something costs, but that at least speculates about what the behavior will be by the public or by the agency with regard to the bill that's being put forward or something. And as an example, you know, you might think of last year they hired a bunch of internal auditors. And it would seem to me that in that, if that had been like a separate bill, that even though the costs would be the line items for those, the salaries of those people and their support staff, that a dynamic note would show that there would be fewer findings of regarding internal controls among the agencies, and their financial controls would be tighter, and that could lead to savings for the state. And in addition, in a meeting with constituent business people who make answer RFPs for state projects of one or contracts of one sort or another, one of the gentlemen said, you know, you ask us always what something is going to cost or what we're going to charge you, but you never ask what the cost savings, what we, and even as a vendor, assume the cost savings are going to be for using our service or our product as one of the elements for looking at not maybe a determinative factor, but as one of the elements in that goes into the RFP, and I think we too little do that. And I thought that was a very good suggestion. You know, not only what are you going to charge us, but what are you going to save us? Senator Youngbauer.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members, and Senator Betzold, again, you know, on this kind of issue, I wish we could look at that. And it is kind of interesting because in my tenure here, 8 years, I've gone through bills where no fiscal analysis was done like that. But for a while now, I've been working on changing our tax structure, coming out with a bill. Some people would refer to it as a fair tax, but switching from income tax to a general sales tax. And it's amazing that as you look at a policy shift like that, the analysis that comes down and the behavior predictions, and I'm wondering, looking at that analysis, why we can't do it on other things so that we get a fair snapshot.
Mm-hmm. Is there further discussion on Senator Betzold's bill, if you'd come forward? Good afternoon. Welcome to the Budget Division. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Michael Meilenberg, representing the Office of Enterprise Technology.
Mr. Meilenberg.
Madam Chair, members, we've testified on this bill in a couple committees and just would like to emphasize that we do support the goals of this bill, and there has been a lot of thought that has gone into this from the public and from legislative staff and members of this committee, and we greatly appreciate that. It's an important issue to us, and we think that the goals are very, very laudable. As we said in other committees, there is a fiscal cost to this, and by removing the webmaster section, it does significantly reduce the cost of the bill, but we would just like to state that there still would be a cost to the bill. We estimate that by removing the webmaster section, it would bring down the total cost by $200,000. Which would mean that on the initial investment, there would be $242,000 required, and then on an ongoing basis of $137,000. Most of the costs relate to the data, obviously the data transparency section, because that is the remaining section of the bill.
Mr. Meilenberg, why aren't you doing that now with your what do you get to do this stuff? $1 million, something? Why aren't you doing this kind of thing now? Why do we have to pass a bill and ask you to do a job that you should be, that should be part of your office's ongoing routine operations?
Madam Chair, members.
That was a loaded question, in case.
Madam Chair, members, OET manages the North Star portal. As Senator Betzold said, there are a number of state agencies that have their own websites. We, for the North Star portal, there are a handful, about 10 agencies that we actually run the website for, which would mean that we do the design. But for most state agencies, they do their own websites, and we simply provide the North Star infrastructure, which holds those websites, so we manage that infrastructure. Our North Star team supports about 37 servers. It organizes the content. It also indexes it. We have about 1 million hits on a monthly basis on the North Star website. But there are a number of websites. In fact, it's over 3,000. We estimate 3,700 websites that belong to state and local government entities that under this bill we would actually have to go out. In terms of the webmaster section, if that were still in the bill, we would actually have to go out and we would have to liaise with them. We would have to analyze their websites. We would have to provide feedback to them about how they make it more accessible. We would have to provide training to them. We figured, as we analyze it, that's a massive undertaking, and that one person alone to do that is a very conservative estimate. In terms of the data transparency section, that is really a new activity for us and across the country. The federal government has led this activity, and a number of states have started to do it. As we've talked with legislative staff, they've pointed out that the state of Utah is a great example in terms of this area. They, as we've reviewed their fiscal note, it actually comes in quite a bit higher than our fiscal note. It was about $480,000 to do the same activity. And that fiscal note didn't even have a webmaster section in it. So we feel that at $242,137 ongoing, that we've crunched our numbers as hard as we can to get it as low as possible.
Attorney Youngbart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meilenberg, can you explain to me what is involved in the equipment hosting services and why it's so much?
Madam Chair, Senator Youngbauer, the hosting services under the webmaster section is that we would actually, in order, the language actually says that we have to ensure accessibility compliance. We would, in order to ensure accessibility compliance, we would need to get software that analyzes the accessibility. And when we talk about accessibility, we're actually talking about accessibility for persons with visual and hearing impairments. We would we would procure some software which would analyze each of the 3,700 government websites to tell us what is inaccessible about them. Then we would actually have to host that software, which is rather large, on our data centers. So software has to live somewhere, and it would live on our computer systems, essentially. Those computer systems, just to have them and maintain them, cost money, it costs energy, you have to maintain those systems. So as a service provider, for the amount of things that we store on our systems in our data centers, there is a cost to that. So in order to host that software and to run other websites through it, there would be a cost to that hosting service. As part of the hosting cost, as part of the transparency section, is that we would actually build a website which would have this data from across state government on it for citizens to access. So when people typically talk about transparency, they talk about data mashups. What this is if you have statistics on the number of crimes in a certain location and you have statistics on the number of tornadoes in a certain section, somebody could come in and they could take that data set and the other data set and put them together and make the conclusion that when there is tornadoes, crimes go up in that area. That's what we're really talking about. We're talking about providing information in a format, in a variety of formats, which would allow citizens to come in, access this website, and use information to reach their own conclusions and to create applications to do things with the information that we haven't even thought of yet. So it's really about providing information to people and them using the information to create research and to learn more about their state and their government. So we would actually have to build a website that would allow the capabilities for people to access this in different formats and to allow the amount of traffic that would come in to access this information. So it's really about a new website and hosting the solution for people to access it in that section of the bill.
Mr. Meilenberg, I'm looking at the language on the Utah, and it looks like to me that there's a whole lot more that they're doing than what is being asked for in here, and certainly setting up things rather than just adding some duties. So, and the cost doesn't look to be as much. So I guess I don't understand your former comment. Expand on that.
Madam Chair, members, the version of the bill that we looked at had a fiscal note of $480,000 initially and $250,000 thereafter.
But to do a whole lot more.
Madam Chair, members, as we looked at the bill, we didn't see it doing a lot more. In fact, it didn't include the web master section. It required a website, which we presume would have to be required under this language as well. And in addition to that, it had a governing body, but the majority of the costs were related to the site itself, as we understand it.
I guess we read it a little bit differently. Is there further discussion on Senator Betzel's bill? Senator Betzel, well,
Madam Chair, even though I took away the major cost of the bill, it sounds like there will still be costs. What I'd like to do is, and I can't bring it down to zero without eliminating the bill. I think this is one of those things where we'll just have to try to get to the Finance Committee, and knowing there's not going to be the money, just basically say, is this something that, you know, we ought to proceed with and, you know, have to be absorbed within existing budgets. That may be an issue, but that's beyond what we can do here. So I will move that Senate File 2188 as amended be recommended to pass to the Finance Committee.
Senator Betzel moves that Senate File 2188, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the full Finance Committee. Further discussion? All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just talk about the immediate future for the Budget Division. As you know, the policy committees have the second deadline of this week. So after this week, the policy committees are not going to be meeting except for special things like, say, confirmations or whatever. It's my understanding that because next week is the last full week before the spring break, we're probably going to have long floor sessions, probably to start cleaning off the general orders. So we won't have our normal Budget Division time. We don't have that many bills that are still out there, but at this time, I'm thinking it doesn't make a lot of sense to spend a lot of hours on the floor and then come back to process the few bills we've got, simply because they're still alive. I mean, they don't need to meet a third deadline. They're not omnibus bills. We can have time, if necessary, after the spring break to process the few bills we still have to look at. There's another issue, though, that's hanging out there. Just yesterday, Senator Cohen sent an email out telling us that if we're going to have an omnibus policy bill out of the Budget Divisions, we need to get that done by March 29th, which is the day the spring break comes. I had not anticipated doing an omnibus bill, although we did pass out the other day the article from the governor's budget bill that basically had his stuff in it. In our contacts with the other body, they are not planning on doing an omnibus policy bill in state government budget. However, they have amended some of the things policy-wise into the budget cutting bill that is going to be taken up probably the next week. So I'm trying to be flexible. If need be, I may have to call a meeting next week to basically pull back the governor's budget bill that we already passed out of here. We might have to take some of the bills that we've passed, like the ones today, the ones we've already considered, roll that into an omnibus bill and do that by March 29th. So just be flexible. As I say, I'm not planning any meetings next week, but if I get the sense that, you know, we're going to have an omnibus budget bill, that may be the only way we can do it. So stay tuned.
Okay.
Otherwise, no more business.
There being no further business before the budget division, we stand adjourned.